Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports here on KOAL 107.3 FM. And 7:50 a.m. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson, and we have another loaded show for you. First, I will start by apologizing to the Houston Rockets. I thought the Rockets had a chance to get a win last night. Look, if they didn't, it was going to be a four-game sweep. Rockets played very well. They made the proper adjustments, and they beat the Golden State Warriors pretty handily in this game last night.
The Warriors didn't play well. Everybody didn't play well. Kevin Durant played well.
He was okay, yeah.
But the rest of the Warriors just non-existent in that game. So Houston gets one, a much-needed one. Now they go up to Oracle, and for a team that, you know, in Golden State that hasn't lost many playoff games at Oracle, tough task. But they salvaged one at home.
They had to have game two. I mean, that was as close to a must-win as you could possibly have, right?
Yeah, it's a must-win.
Just
like I thought Cleveland had to win game two. That was like a must-win for Cleveland.
Well, no, I'll tell you the difference here. Cleveland was on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Houston was at home. You fall down 0-2 with two games coming up at Oracle, you're finished. Cleveland is fine as long as they protect home court and they shorten it to a, you know, best two out of three series. Game three is a must-win for Cleveland. I view that the game three in the Cleveland-Boston series is the equivalence to game two in the Houston-Golden State series, and Houston took care of business. Now, with that being said, we don't have any basketball tonight. We don't have any basketball tomorrow. That kind of stinks.
Yeah, a long layoff. So Saturday we get the Eastern Conference, Sunday the West. So they got to drag this out as much as they can.
Yeah, you got to pause, I guess, for travel. But with that, we still have plenty of NBA stories. Now, we have talked about the NBA lottery the last couple of days here on the show. And Luka Doncic is a kid that you and I have talked a lot about making the leap from Europe to the NBA next season. But he told reporters that he hasn't decided if he is for sure coming over to the NBA next year. Do you believe that?
No. And I think he's just focused on, he has like two games left over there. I think it's just, you know, the right thing to say right now. But I believe he'll be in the draft when it's all said and done.
He's 19 years old, plays for Real Madrid. Number two overall prospect, according to certain mock drafts, may even be the number one overall prospect, according to some others. Now, the Phoenix Suns have the first pick. The Kings have the second pick. Odds are this kid is going to go to Sacramento. Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why. I mean, look, with him playing overseas, he has certain control over when he wants to, when he decides to come over here and play. Maybe he doesn't want to play for Phoenix or Sacramento. I don't know.
I wouldn't blame him. I wouldn't want to play in Sacramento or Atlanta.
Well, he's considered one of the top players in Europe, two-time EuroLeague Rising Star winner over the last 2 years, and alongside Goran Dragic, Doncic helped Slovenia to its first Euro basketball gold medal in 2017. They picked up victories over Kristaps Porzingis and also Marc Gasol in Spain. So, I mean, this kid has gone up against NBA talent. A lot of people are, you know, the unicorn phrase that people are using with Porzingis?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are saying the same thing about Doncic. And from what I've seen on video, yeah, I can buy that. But that's an interesting wrinkle. Hopefully we'll find out for sure if this kid's coming over in the next couple of days, because I think that has a heavy impact on the draft. If he doesn't, Marvin Bagley goes number two. I think that's pretty simple.
And then if you're Atlanta, I would trade, because yeah, the talent is just falls off after that.
Now let's talk college basketball here for a moment. I'm not going to say you hate it, but you do not like March Madness in the NCAA tournament.
No, I think it's the dumbest way to crown a champion.
Tell me why.
Because you have these conference tournaments that are automatic bids, which we need to get rid of. So a team gets screwed, basically. That's a good quality team that wins the regular season. They go in the conference tournament and they lose one game. They're not getting in the tournament. And two,
you hate it from a mid-major perspective.
Mid-major perspective, I just don't think it's a fair way to crown a champion. I think there's too much. But they can't change it. I mean, what are you going to do?
So, okay, I think you and I agree on automatic bids should go to conference outright winners.
Yeah, the regular season. Do away with the conference tournaments. I know they're moneymakers, though.
I know they're moneymakers, but I think those could be used for bubble teams. I agree with you. I think the body of work is something that should be considered. So I think we agree there. The ACC is planning on proposing to expand the NCAA tournament field from 68 to 72 teams. Your thoughts on that?
No. We already have too many teams. If you're going to go to 72, then four more teams are going to complain that they don't get in. Then we're going to, what, be 76 at one point, 78?
Yeah, I know every year we're talking about a couple of teams that don't get in.
So are we going to have like 2 days in Dayton that are all bubble teams?
Well, and I think the ACC is proposing this. I mean, they're citing the fact that college football teams have more opportunities than college basketball teams. Yes, they do, but here's the difference. College football teams are basically playing glorified exhibition games. The NCAA tournament, all 68 teams are vying for a national championship. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the difference. So I think that's a stupid comparison, saying that football gets more opportunity than basketball
and
because
the ACC,
they don't.
Yeah, the ACC wants to push it so they can get more teams from their conferences.
The ACC was ticked off that Notre Dame didn't get in last year.
Yeah.
They were ticked off at that. So, okay, they typically have a team that's on the bubble most years.
We have too many teams already. 68's way too many.
Bubble teams that could have and probably should have been invited, I agree with that. I can see that argument. But at the same time, as long as you have conference tournaments, like, that fixes the issue right there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That fixes the majority of the issues. Every team has the opportunity to get in. Every college basketball Division I team has an opportunity to get into the field, and it's not necessarily based on body of work. How many conferences take the entire field of the conference into the tournament? I don't know that statistic. I'm assuming that just about every team plays in a conference tournament, right?
I believe they all do, yeah, because they expanded those conferences and gave double buys and things like that.
Right, so every team goes to a conference tournament.
So you have an opportunity to make the field.
Now, look, I graduated from Southern Utah. I pay attention to Southern Utah closely. This is a team that was two or three wins away from getting into the NCAA tournament. They had no business being in that position because they were not good during the regular season. They have the opportunity. Every team has the opportunity.
Teams are getting in with records as like 17 and 13 and things like that.
Right, right. You know, you have a team like Oklahoma that got in. Didn't they lose like 10 out of their last 12 games
or
something like that?
Yeah, they were 18-14.
I can't remember. I remember it was one of the big head-scratchers, and you had a team, Oklahoma State, got left out.
Yeah, and they
had beat Oklahoma 2 out of 3 times.
They wanted Trey Young in there.
Yeah. So I understand that there are teams that probably should be in the field of 68 that are not. But if you expand it to 72, Team 73 is going to complain. And this is the argument that I have for college football. If you want to go to an 8-team tournament, I get it, because we have 5 Power 5 conferences and only 4 playoff spots. I understand wanting to expand that to 8. It's not going to diminish the controversy, because then whatever team is number 9 is going to complain. At some point, you have to cut it off. Postseason tournaments are not for everyone. That is just the reality of the world today. I am not concerned about traveling for these programs, because the NCAA and colleges can afford to travel. I'm not worried about the cost of traveling. I'm really not concerned about the length of travel for the student athletes. At some point in time, you have to cut off a postseason field. That's why it's called postseason. Not everyone should qualify for the postseason. This is a terrible idea, but it will eventually go through, because America is obsessed with March Madness.
They love it.
Do you know why they love it? Because of gambling.
The gambling
aspect. That's why they love it. Okay? To a spectator, it doesn't matter. People are going to love the idea of getting 72 teams in opposed to 68, because that essentially gives you 2 more games that you can gamble on. That's what it boils down to. The college basketball enthusiast, the hardcore college basketball fan, does not care if the field is at 72 or if the field is at 68, because at this point it doesn't matter. Okay, so to me, I think this is a terrible idea.
No, I'm with you.
Keep the field at 68. You're not going to prevent any controversy. Is the ACC going to complain if a team like Notre Dame, or you can throw any team, Pitt, I don't throw any ACC team you want out there, If they come in at 73, is the ACC going to complain once again? The fact of the matter is, every team has an opportunity to get hot and win 3 to 4 games in their conference tournament, regardless of what they have done the previous 25 games to get into the tournament. It's a flawed system as it is. Do not expand the field.
Instead of looking at the other changes they want with widening the lane and
That's fine.
I want that. We should go to the international type rules for college basketball where the lane is widened. Because the three-point line right now is too close. I think it's an easy shot.
I was fine with the rule changes that they experimented with
in the quarter. I like the quarter idea, too.
The quarter idea, I know a lot of people were high on that. That's fine.
No.
Don't expand the field of 68. I didn't want it to be expanded from 64 to 68, and no. I still have a problem with the first four games because you have teams, you have 16 seeds guaranteed in the tournament, right? This is my problem with it, and I know people have explained this to me in the past. I still don't believe there's a logical explanation for this. We have two 16 play-in games, and we have two 11 play-in games. So a 15 is already into the second round, while four 11 seeds have to battle it out to get there.
What's the logic behind that?
That doesn't make sense to me, but it's based on automatic bids, RPI, I don't know. The NCAA field is already ridiculous as it sits with 68 teams. And the automatic bids going to conference championship tournament winners.
And then they
not
pick and choose
outright.
The matchups that they want, the committee does.
Come on,
that,
just
that
keep
makes
it
more
at 68.
Sense. Yeah.
Keep it at 68. Let's take a look at the scoreboard in Major League Baseball. We had a final earlier today. The Dodgers rout the Marlins 7-0. Justin Turner have a day. Back game number 3 for the big fella. He has 5 RBIs in this game. Kenta Maeda throws 8 scoreless innings. I know yesterday you said the Dodgers would be fine. I said no, they're not fine. Quality start, 8 back, quality start from Maeda, 5 RBIs from Turner. Puig is now homered in 3 out of the last 5 games. Is this the turning point for the team?
I think so. I still say the Dodgers are fine. I still say they go out and make a move. Only 8 back. The Diamondbacks aren't playing well. They're 3-7 in their last 10, so
right.
They're fine.
Let's take a look
at that division stinks.
It's not good. No, all 5 teams in that division have definitely struggled. Let's take a look at some of the other games that we have going on this evening. 5:05, we get the Padres and the Pirates. The A's will battle the Blue Jays. We get the Orioles and the Red Sox at 5:10. Phillies and the Cardinals. Cubs at the Braves. John Lester's on the mound today for the Cubbies. He's 3-1 with a 2.6 ERA. He's definitely found his rhythm as of late. 6 o'clock hour, we get the Rangers and the White Sox. The Rays and the Angels will battle at 8:07. Do you realize that Mike Trout is on pace to have like one of the most historical seasons in Major League Baseball? We focus so heavily on the NL, but have you paid attention to what this guy has done so far this year?
Yeah, putting up absolutely ridiculous numbers.
Historical season. I like the pitching matchup in the Rays Angels game as well. We get Chris Archer, who's always in trade rumors. He struggled a bit this year, 2-3 with a 5.6 ERA, and former Salt Lake Bees pitcher Tyler Skaggs, who was 3-2 with a 3.07 ERA, are going toe to toe on the mound. That's a fun matchup. The Angels are playing good baseball at 25-18. We take a look at the Tigers and the Mariners tonight at 8:10, and in the nightcap, it's the Rockies and the Giants. Chad Bettis, who has been a surprise from the Rockies, he's got such a cool story too as well. Bettis will be going up against the Shark Jeff Samardzija, and that's a look at what's happening in Major League Baseball. On today's show, we're going to catch up with Coach Rob Smith of the Emory Spartan baseball team. In fact, that'll be next segment as we continue to wrap up the high school sports season. And then a little bit later, we'll catch up with Jameson Welsh, great friend of the show, and talk some NBA basketball. It's all straight ahead here on this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And tomorrow, the girls' high school baseball season will begin its final stretch as play resumes in Spanish Fork in the quarterfinals. Now, play was halted this past weekend due to rain, but as it sits right now, the Carbon Lady Dinos are one of just 4 teams who have yet to suffer a loss in the 3A state championship tournament, which is true double elimination format. The Lady Dinos will take the field tomorrow to battle the Union Cougars at 2 p.m. A win there would put Carbon in the semifinals against either Grantsville or Manti. If the Lady Dinos were in fact to lose in tomorrow's game, they would drop to the one-loss bracket, where they would then go toe-to-toe with the Grand in an elimination contest. Again, that would be tomorrow at 4 p.m. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will continue to follow the Carbon Lady Dinos throughout their state championship run. Now we stick on the diamond, but we move over to junior college baseball. And yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by USU Eastern baseball manager Scott Mattson as we recapped the 2018 baseball season. It was one of the better seasons in recent history for USU Eastern. They finished 14-17 in conference play and actually had made a push to claim one of the top two spots within the conference. Now, on top of the Eagles' success with wins and losses, they also had three individuals stand out for their performances on the field. Standout Jarrett Hunt was selected to the Scenic West Athletic Conference first team, while sophomores Jared Lesser and also Jesse Rowley were named to the All-Conference second team. Coach Mattson talked about how successful the season was for his team in the grand scheme of things.
It was great to see these kids succeed and kind of build a new tradition here and get things going the right direction. And you know what, these kids battled all year long and they did a good job. It was fun. It was exciting, and we did have a shot, and you know what, it was close. We just, one of those things with baseball, and you know, you go out there and things work, you put everything you have, and it just kind of falls in their favor.
A highly successful season for USU Eastern does have its downfalls, as several key members of this year's team will move on due to graduation. Coach Mattson says they have some big shoes to fill moving into 2019.
We're losing a lot of starting pitchers. The three of the four starting pitchers were sophomores that we're going to lose. We did have some young kids that really stepped up there at the end, and I'm excited to see what they can do next year. Jake Smith did a great job for us, you know, coming in, but it's going to be a matter of those kids that, you know what, they didn't get a start, they're going to have to jump in as starters next year and do the job. And I feel like we're going to have a really competitive team next year.
You can listen to this complete interview by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. Click on the Drive Time Sports link in the right-hand corner and scroll down to the Coach's Corner. Now we will continue our season wrap-up interviews for the baseball season today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports. We'll be joined by Emory baseball manager Rob Smith, who recently completed his first season at the position. Coach Smith and the Emory Spartans' year came to a close this past weekend after they suffered a loss to the Union Cougars in the one-loss bracket. Coach Smith will appear today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports beginning at 4 p.m. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
We're going to continue our season recaps here on Drive Time Sports. Over the last 2 days, we've talked USU Eastern softball and baseball as well. Today, we're going to begin wrapping up the high school baseball season. The Emory Spartans had a decent season, to say the least. They did qualify for the state championship tournament, where they went 1-2. Only had two kids that really played varsity ball, only three seniors on the team. Very, very young squad. And joining us to talk about that, we have first-year manager Rob Smith, who also happens to be the third manager in as many seasons at Emory High. Coach, a pleasure as always to get you on. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Definitely, Coach. Seems just like yesterday we were talking about you being named the manager of the baseball team, but now the season has come to a close. And first off, Coach, your assessment of the 2018 season. I mean, when you look back on it, you've had a couple of days to kind of reflect. What's your thoughts on the way how the year went?
It was good. Good for my first year. Good learning experience. We were young, so I can't really be disappointed in how the season turned out. We played a lot of good close games. Just came up on the wrong side of a few.
Yeah, I think from a spectator standpoint, the thing that was frustrating in a sense is you guys, even though you're so young, Coach, you guys were so close in so many games this season, even in some of the games that turned out to be a fairly lopsided score. I mean, we go back, we talk about the loss to Carbon in the opening round of the state tournament. That game is 2-0 in the third inning. I mean, it's a close game with the runner-up throughout the, in the state championship tournament. You guys were so close.
Yeah, like I said, it just comes down to experience. I only had two kids that even played any varsity last year at all. And it's a big difference from JV to varsity. I mean, most people don't think that, but it is a huge experience for them with emotions and everything. So,
Well, let's talk about the way the season came to a close. A loss to Union. This is in the one loss bracket in a game in which you guys actually had control of this contest, Coach. I'm sure when you guys were up in this game 7-5, you probably felt pretty comfortable about where the team was sitting.
I wasn't quite comfortable just because of the way the ball was bouncing there. A lot of errors both sides. I don't know if it was the turf or nerves or what, but both teams had a lot of errors. I kept urging the kids to get a few more runs, tack on, just to make it a little more comfortable. We didn't really do it. They came back, tied it up in the fifth, and then took a lead in the sixth, and then we just couldn't chip away. We had runners in scoring position, second and third base to tie the ball game. Just couldn't get them across.
It's kind of fitting, I guess, right? Because the season started in which you guys had runners in scoring position to potentially tie a game, and it was called because of sunlight, because of darkness. So you guys start the season with some runners in scoring position, unable to get them across, and that's kind of how the season ends. I guess it's a reoccurring theme for you guys throughout the year. I mean, you were able to get guys in scoring position, but leaving runners on base seemed to be a problem.
Yeah, we just never really had that clutch hit. When we needed it with runners in scoring position, kind of the theme of the year. And that, I think that comes with experience as well.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. Outside of finishing 1-2, Coach, at the state tournament, how pleased were you with the way the kids performed?
Good. Good for their first time. I think it'll help a ton next year when state tournament rolls around with experience.
How much different is it playing in the state tournament now that you've had one under your belt compared to the region and regular season?
I think it'll help. They'll know the mindset going in a little better, and hopefully won't be as nervous.
Is it difficult from a manager standpoint dealing with the pitch count, the restrictions that they have placed now here in the state of Utah, and playing in a state tournament where you have to work your way through a one-loss bracket knowing that, you know, these kids can only throw X amount of pitches, but at the same time, you may have to win 4 or 5 games to get back to where you want to get? I mean, that's got to be that has to be difficult from a manager standpoint.
Yeah, that's tough. Luckily, I have quite a few kids that can throw. We kind of relied on 3 or 4 there towards the end of the season just because they were throwing so well. But like I said, I do have a lot of kids that could have thrown. Just getting past that one area, that one game.
Do you feel, Coach, that you guys were playing some of your best baseball later in the year? Or was that, I know when you and I had talked, you said at the beginning of the season you guys had beat some good teams. Did you see that vast improvement at the end of the year the way you would have liked?
The last few games, we played defensively really well. I think we played really well against Carbon defensively. They scored 9 runs. They strung some hits together. But like you said, it was 2-0 going in the third. Defensively, I was happy where we were. We've improved a lot. Offensively, it just comes down to that one clutch hit. Here or there, and we win a few more games.
Yeah, no question about it, Coach. And again, you mentioned what a young team you guys have. You only really have to say goodbye to 3 seniors, Easton Gordon, Jared Snow, and also Colton Wilson. What did these 3 seniors mean to the team this year?
They're huge. They have a lot of leadership. They come to practice, work hard every day. Set a good example for the younger kids. I couldn't have asked for better seniors my first year.
Let's talk about him individually. Easton Gordon is a kid that has seen valuable time on this roster since he was basically a sophomore. I believe he even played a little bit as a freshman. How do you replace a kid like Easton?
It's tough. Hopefully somebody will step up and fill those shoes. Those are big shoes to fill. He's a great leader on the field and off the field. Great example. All the way around, like a baseball player should be. So tough to fill.
One of the things I've always noticed about Easton is emotionally, he always seems to be intact. Like, he's always right where he needs to be emotionally as far as his balance, his body balance goes and his mindset. I mean, if we're talking basketball, football, or baseball, it seems like he's always on point in those two aspects.
Yeah, he's got a good head on his shoulders. like I said, he goes about doing his work, gets the work done, doesn't show a lot of emotion, just does what he's supposed to.
Talk about Colton Wilson, because he definitely hit the ball very well at times throughout the season, and I'm not sure how much you expected to get from Colton offensively, but at times this year, Coach, he was pretty potent for you.
Yeah, Colton was a huge asset to our team. Another great leader, worked hard in practice every day. Great kid all around. There's nothing I could say bad about Colton. Great, like I said, great kid, works hard. He's going into the Air Force, already passed his test to get accepted. That's huge.
Definitely. And, of course, Jared Snow as well, Coach, and this is a kid that when he got on base, he was pretty dangerous. I mean, he was a threat for you guys on the base paths.
Yeah, and, you know, Jared struggled at the start of the season. We switched up a few things. He worked hard at it. Had three huge hits in the last state game against Union. Probably my most improved player on any team. Really worked hard at what we changed and really started to hit the ball well for us. Great defensive player. Usually chased everything down. His nickname was the Black Hole in center, and he did just that, sucked everything down for us.
Coach, looking ahead to what you guys managed to build this year, I'm sure for a coach it's nice to know that the majority of these kids are coming back, especially if you feel that you have made strides in a short period of time. I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident in what we have returning next year. I got nine seniors coming back. What more could you ask for?
Right, yeah, right. Coach, from a dugout perspective, how did everything mesh with the assistant coaches that you have as well, and how much did you have to lean on those guys?
Meshed really well. I couldn't ask for better coaches. They bought into the game plan, and I feel that we executed it pretty well as a group. We're all on the same page. And like I said, we're trying to build a tradition here. And I feel the guys I have in that spot are going to help us succeed.
What was the biggest learning experience that you took away, Coach, from year one?
I would just say probably dealing with the kids. A lot of different age groups, dealing with how they handle things emotionally, physically. Probably the biggest thing I took from year one.
Is it a big difference from the junior college ranks?
Yeah. Yep. You know, the junior college kids, you're getting the best of every from surrounding schools. You're getting the best players from those schools. They're all there to work hard. Not saying the high school team doesn't work hard, but they're fighting for position day in and day out. The high school kids, like I said, there's some of them are 15 years old, 16 years old.
Yeah,
don't really know what they want in life yet.
Exactly. You're molding young minds at the high school level, right?
Yep, definitely.
Coach, what's next now for this baseball team now that the season is done? Do you have anything in the future planned or at least coming up here relatively soon?
Yeah, we're going to start doing some practices here relatively soon. We got a few games scheduled with surrounding schools. We're going to try to get at least 16 games in this summer.
Do you encourage the kids to play some Legion ball as well?
Yes, I have.
That's good.
Hopefully they'll get out and do it. That's what it takes. I talked with a few of them that are good basketball players. Said, why are you so good at basketball? Because we go to camps, we work on it. I said, would you do that for baseball? And they said they would. So that's what it's going to take, is a lot of off-season work.
It is a year-round sport, right? I mean, baseball, I know we don't live in the climate for a year-round sport of baseball, but, I mean, to exceed, it is a year-round sport.
Yeah, it is. You've got to work at it constantly to get better. there's really no off season if you want to be good.
Right.
So.
Well, Coach, it's been so much fun getting you on each week to kind of dissect the way the kids are performing throughout the year. Thank you for always making time for us. And I know before you know it, we'll be talking about baseball once again.
Yeah, can't wait.
Again, that's Rob Smith, manager of the Emory High School baseball team, recapping the 2018 season in which Emory again went 1-2 at the state tournament, falling to Union and Carbon, but getting a win over Grantsville and actually ending Grantsville's season. Emory will be back next year, another year under the belt for a lot of kids on that team. Again, they're only graduating three seniors, only one senior that really had a lot of varsity baseball experience. I think Coach Smith and the Spartans really may have even overachieved when you take a look at what that team had. Hey, we have more Drive Time Sports coming up. We're going to talk a lot of NBA basketball, and that's straight ahead when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
This is Trevor Ariza, and you listen to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Ariza ahead of the pack. Ariza, reverse slam! An explosive game for Trevor Ariza.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. We're going to step away from the local sports front. We'll talk NBA basketball. Last night, the Houston Rockets, in what was as close to a must-win situation as you could possibly be in a series, came up big and dominated the Golden State Warriors for the majority of the game as they picked up a comfortable win. Now that series is tied 1-1. It'll go back to Oracle on Sunday. On the flip side of that, we have the Celtics and the Cavs at 2-0 in favor of Boston. They'll resume on Saturday, and joining us to talk about that, we have a great friend of mine, a great friend of the show, Jamison Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Jamison, as always, fun to get you on. Thank you.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it. Glad we're in the middle of the conference finals. It looks like we've come a long way since the beginning back in October.
Absolutely. It's been fun to follow it up to this point. And again, no surprises, at least at the beginning of the season, when we said it would be Boston and Cleveland. And I think a lot of people expected it to be Houston and Golden State as well once the Rockets had acquired Chris Paul. We've talked about that. Now that we're two games deep into the series, last night, again, a must-win situation for Houston. If they don't win game two, this series is over in four. Yet the way Houston won last night may give even those optimistic fans reason to believe that maybe Houston can take this six games.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. With Houston's all of their role players. Like, we know Harden and Paul are going to play great. That's what they do. But Houston's going to go as far as their role players. In the regular season, the P.J. Tuckers, Eric Gordons, those kind of guys had really good gears to wear off driving, kicking off pick and roll, and kickouts. They were able to score a lot of open threes. They didn't do that in game one. They struggled some of the Utah series with that. Eric Gordon had a weird playoff. So a lot of the guys they were counting on for contributions with have been kind of shaky. But last night, you know, P.J. Tucker had a career high, 22 points. Eric Gordon found his shot. The Warriors didn't play the same exact defense that they've been playing the game before, even in the previous series. So we'll see. I think we have a really good series on our hands. However, the Warriors are still the better team. They have the upper hand. And my rule of thumb in a seven-game series, you have to be prepared to win two road games. And I don't think Houston can do that. I think Golden State can do that. So it's going to be great to see this upcoming weekend.
I picked Golden State to win at five at the beginning of the series, and I'm going to stick with that because I do believe they'll get both at Oracle. And if they do, that's a lot of pressure for Houston in game five. But in order for Golden State to win two games at home, let's be realistic. Steph Curry has got to shoot the long ball a little bit better, and really, Klay Thompson was not good last night either. A lot of the shots that both of these guys put up, Jameson, seemed forced. And so I'm going to credit Houston's defense with that. It's not all on Golden State. I mean, Houston forced those shots, but at the same time, Curry and Thompson did not look good last night.
Yeah, they definitely didn't play their best games last night. Curry, they're guarding Curry a certain way. They're trying to keep him off the three-point line, and I understand that. That's where he's most lethal at. And even though he missed some open threes, they usually make. You kind of have to figure out that's not going to work in Oakland. You have to kind of figure out, hey, he's going to hit a couple of these at home, maybe even hit a couple in a row. So it's going to be a different situation in Oakland. But last night, the Rockets' defense created a lot of turnovers. They were the more aggressive team. They were faster last night, and it showed. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing no one's really talking about. Golden State, when they're focused, they don't turn the ball over. Their biggest issues is turnovers. Out of all the things they have going for themselves, the only thing that really, really bites them is turnovers. When they don't turn the ball over, they're unbeatable because they operate so efficiently on offense and defense. But the turnovers, that's what really gets them. If they keep it around 10, 12 turnovers a game or less, they don't lose. Anything over that, they had like, I think like 7 in the first quarter last night. Kind of figure it would be one of those nights.
Golden State shoots 30% from downtown, and again, I just don't think that that's something that you can rely on if you're Houston. But one of the things I pointed out at the beginning of the series, and I think it's true, look, last night proved this to be true. If Houston is going to beat Golden State, they have to score in the 120s, Jameson, minimum. You have to get to that 120 threshold because, again, Golden State may have only scored 105 last night, but look, Houston had some dynamic quarters. They scored 38 in the second, 31 in the third, 32 in the fourth. They have to get to that 120 threshold, and if they do that, they have a chance to win. Now, I don't think you can do that consistently against Golden State, but when I look at what Houston wants to do offensively, I think 120 is a good gauge for where this team needs to be.
No, I agree with you 1,000%. But also, Houston has to defend well. Houston has to keep Golden State under, 25, 27 and a quarter. They want to win. Like, that's the key because we all know Golden State can get to 40 and a quarter and hold you down to under 20 in some cases. So that's going to be the key for Houston is defending. Their offense is going to be their offense, but their defense for me is the key because in game one, they were non-existent defensively. They were like, they didn't really know what to do. They didn't really have a plan. Game two, they were out there playing harder. The concept still didn't make any sense of what they were doing defensively, but they were playing harder, so they made better plays. However, I just don't see how it works going forward in the series because here's the thing. You can defend Kevin Durant however you want to. You can defend Steph however you want to. Those guys still got a lot of open shots. Like, Steph makes half the shots he misses. We're having a totally different conversation today. So it's really a make or miss league, as they like to say. I don't think Houston did anything special defensively. Their guys played harder. They played with a desperation attached to them, and you got to give them credit for that. But with that being said, I'm going to go with Golden State had a bad shooting night. Steph had a rough night outside the paint. At the same time, they get the benefit of the doubt. I think they turn around.
Again, we're being joined right now by Jameson Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Let's flip series because, again, I approach these right now where we're sitting. It's two completely different tales. Okay, Boston did what they had to do. They protected home court. Cleveland has the opportunity to come back and do the same thing, and then we're looking at a best 2 out of 3 series. Completely different than what Houston encountered last night. Game 3 for Cleveland, in my mind, Jameson, is essentially a must-win just as Game 2 was for Houston.
Oh, it's beyond a must win. Here's the issue with Cleveland. Not as must win, it's to try to keep an era alive. If they lose this series, if they get swept, there's no way LeBron's coming back. Like, there's no way. If they lose in 6 or 7, there's always a chance. But if they get swept, he's not coming back. So they're playing to keep an era and a situation alive. So that in itself is a lot of pressure, a lot going on. But also, look, I mean, the Celtics haven't won a road game in these playoffs.
That's nuts.
They've won one. They've won one.
Right.
Until they're able to show more consistency on the road, I got to favor Cleveland at home the next couple of games, even though Boston wins a lot of individual matchups. But got to give Cleveland some credit at home. However, I don't like what I see. I don't like the body language from J.R. Smith. I don't like what George Hill's been giving them. Kevin Love has been pretty good. Outside of that, it's been really shaky. I don't know how they match up with this Celtics team that they have. These young wing guys with Tatum and Brown are really causing havoc the whole game for the Cavs. They don't have an answer.
LeBron James has been everything and more that they could possibly ask for throughout the entire postseason. And if I'm the Cleveland Cavaliers or I'm a Cavalier fan, here's what worries me, Jameson. And I go back to Game 2, and I know it was in Boston, but still, LeBron was magnificent. A 42-point triple-double. Kevin Love was very good in this game. Shot 50% from the field. Had 22 points and 15 rebounds. They are absolutely getting no production from anywhere else, including the bench.
And that's a problem because now you have the Celtics who are a very good defensive team, especially when they go to guys like Marcus Smart, who who is known for his defensive chops. That's a very tough situation for the Cavs to combat with. They just don't have a lot of athletic guys on that roster, and the guys they traded for aren't that good in that system. For whatever reason, Jordan Clarkson and Rodney Hood forgot how to play basketball when they got to Cleveland. And with that being said, it's a rough situation for everybody that's going on right now in Cleveland in terms of that they're so thin on the bench. They don't have a lot of alternatives to go to. So we'll see what's going to take place. I do think Cleveland wins at least one game at home. I don't think they get swept. But it's not looking good. It really isn't. Whenever LeBron has one of those 40-point triple-double games, they usually win. When they lost that game, it almost looked like a sign of why, hey, this one, it might be a little bit different than the rest of those games.
Jordan Clarkson did not play in Game 2. Again, this was one of those guys that I expected Cleveland to rely heavily on once we got to the postseason, just based on the fact that Jordan Clarkson was pretty good in L.A. at providing points. Sometimes he was a volume shooter, but at the same time, when you have guys like J.R. Smith shooting 0-for-7, I would expect Clarkson at some particular time to play a role. Rodney Hood is not scoring the basketball at a relatively efficient rate as well. And then the story breaks that Cleveland didn't really care about getting Jordan Clarkson. They made the deal to grab Larry Nance Jr. I just can't believe that, Jameson, and I think in this series you may have to rely on Jordan Clarkson at some point in time to give that bench some production.
Yeah, they definitely need him. They need all those guys. They don't have – they're not in a situation where they can be picky. They need all those guys to play as much as possible. And until they do, they're going to be in trouble. They just don't have a lot of options scoring. It almost makes you look like, wow, they gave on Dwayne Wade, who found his fountain of youth in Miami when he went back home. So they're in some trouble. Now, they're not – you know, they're not in an impossible situation, but when you look at their situation, they're in trouble. Because they just don't have enough guys that can score. LeBron had 42, and they didn't get to 100.
Right.
So if he, you know, and that's happened several times in playoffs where he's gone off, but they're not getting to 100. That's a scary sight in my eyes.
19 points off of the bench in Game 2. Boston and Cleveland, again, that'll take place on Saturday. We get Golden State and Houston, Game 3 on Sunday. Jameson, as always, it's a pleasure to get you on. I'm going to ask you this before I let you go. The Toronto Raptors tweeted out a congratulations to Dwayne Casey. Bad form, right?
It is, but at the same time, he was there 7 years. He's definitely the best coach they've had there while coaching. So, I don't think that was made in any bad way. I just think that it is what it is. With that being said, Dwayne Casey is going to get a job whether he wants this year or next year. He's going to get a job. It's unfortunate that job came on the market so late because I think there was other candidates that may have wanted to take a different look at it. But with that being said, that Raptors job is going to be it's not a bad job to take. It's one of the top 10 jobs in the league. And Dwayne Casey is a top 10 type of coach. So he's going to have his pick when the time comes. I just hope he's able to make some adjustments because the way he defended the Cavs with LeBron this past series was pretty bad.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying stuff. Jameson, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. Again, thank you very much. Let the listeners know where they can find the rest of your work.
ESPN 1100 in Las Vegas, ESPN 1480 in Nebraska, Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico and in Vegas, and of course here once a week or so.
Jameson, thank you. We'll do it again next week.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me as always.
We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back and put the final touches on this edition of the show when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Beagles.
We're back to close out this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports. Fun show today. Covered a lot of ground. Talk some local baseball. We're going to continue on with the local baseball talk tomorrow. Again, if you missed it earlier today here on the show, Coach Rob Smith of the Emory High School baseball team recapped the 2018 year. You can listen to that interview right now, actually, at CastleCountryRadio.com. Also, all you got to do is click on the Drive Time Sports link in the right-hand corner. You'll have access to all the coaches' interviews, and you can even listen to Drive Time Sports on-demand podcast style. Again, just click on the Drive Time Sports link. Tomorrow, we'll continue on the high school baseball talk. Coach Jeff Cincinnatus will wrap things up. Carbon, again, runners-up at the 3A state championship tournament. And then we're going to turn our attention to American Legion Baseball. Helper will hold three teams this year in three different divisions. Price is also going to be in the American Legion baseball season, so there's plenty of local baseball still to come. But tomorrow we'll talk to Coach Jeff Cincinnatus. And also, do not forget tomorrow, the softball team for Carbon High, who is yet to lose, they are in the quarterfinals. They'll have an opportunity to strengthen their case for a state championship as they pick up play tomorrow. And we also have the track and field state championships coming up. A lot of local sports, but this is the final weekend of high school sports in 2018, which is kind of sad.
Kind of sad, yeah, everything's wrapping up, the school year's almost over, and then before you know it, we'll hit that summer break for a little while and roll right into football.
And football's typically a year-round sport anymore, but before you know it, we'll be talking to Coach Josh Huntsman and also Coach John Famalo to talk a bit about the football team and the off-season workouts. So again, great show. Want to thank Coach Rob Smith for taking out the time to join us, and of course, Jamison Welsh. Love getting Jamison on to talk some NBA basketball. Dead night in the NBA tonight and tomorrow. The season will continue with the Eastern and Western Conference playoffs in the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Tomorrow, we are going to be live at the Auto Farm Price Auto Group's Ford location as we celebrate their grand opening. We don't do Drive Time Sports live on location very often. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, they're always fun. We haven't done one in a long time, so looking forward to being down there.
That, me too, definitely. We'll be joined by Justin Kennedy on the mic, and I know Steve Bordstein is going to join us to talk Preakness. Justify is a legitimate Triple Crown threat, I'm telling you. That horse is a legitimate Triple Crown threat.
Yeah, so everybody should tune in. He's coming out, what, the 8th slot, right?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk to Steve Bordstein about that. And again, we'll be joined by Coach Jeff Cincinnatus. So we got a great show lined up for you tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.